you doing within right? He asked the question rhetorically. Are you surprised? Mac asked, enjoying the moment.
Yes, when we heard you had escaped, Campbell said, everyone assumed you would flee the country.
Leave Scotland, Mac repeated. Just when I'm having a good time.
Campbell's smile thinned, and his eyes filled with malice. Although the man had not attended the trial, Mac sensed he'd been very interested in the outcome.
Well now, it appears we will have our hanging.
Over my dead body, Mac had to answer.
Miss Davidson started forward, her gloved hands curled into fists. You were beating my uncle, she charged. And she would have taken after Campbell, but Mac hooked an arm around her waist.
Steady, my girl, steady, he warned,
speaking close to her ear. He looked to Campbell.
Miss Davidson is a woman of passion. You are lucky I am here to keep her in check.
You will not touch my uncle, she informed Campbell, but she wisely stayed close to Mac's protection. Campbell's beady eyes dropped to Mac's possessive hand resting at her waist. Indeed, he seemed riveted by the sight, and Mac had a memory, something Gordana had told him. And that's when Mac understood. It all fell into place and was so obvious. He was shocked he hadn't suspected earlier. He looked to the Earl of Tay, whose cheeks were still red, either from his drinking or from being slapped by Campbell's gloves, a humiliating gesture. Campbell had not only wanted to cause pain, but to make Tay do his will, and to what purpose? Mac was certain it wasn't information about his whereabouts. Campbell had been genuinely surprised by his appearance. So what else could Tay know that would interest Campbell?
You know, Enright, Campbell said, I should notify the authorities you are here.
And spoil the game? Mac challenged.
Instead of answering, Campbell said, Did you know you are with a murderer, Miss Davidson? Did you know I don't value your opinion at all, Mr. Campbell? She returned.
There is a rebuke, Mac said approvingly.
Go ahead and think you are clever, Campbell said,
taking a step toward the door.
But understand, they have a price on your head in Edinburgh, Irishman. It is a good one.
That pleases me, Mac replied.
I'd hate to be wanted for a paltry sum.
His humour did not sit well with the Scot.
You'd best be careful. The Earl is deeply in my debt. He may decide to claim that reward. Certainly that would save Anfield.
Money. Yes, money could be the motive for Campbell's being here, but Mac didn't think so. For his part, Tay held his glass as if it contained the meaning of life, and perhaps to him it did. He was not a well man.
My lord, Campbell said, addressing Tay, think upon what I said.
There was no mistaking the menace in his voice. Miss Davidson, good afternoon.
Enright or Earl of whatever. God, I didn't even know the Irish had titles.
He laughed as he said this, and Mac could hate the man.
Balin, Mac said. Aye, Balin, Campbell repeated, as if it was of no consequence. I hope to see you hang very soon.
Always a pleasure spending time with you as well, Mac answered.
Perhaps he would just rip the man's throat out of his body. Campbell left, and it seemed as if a foul smell had gone with him. Mac turned to Miss Davidson, ready to say as much, but her focus was on her uncle. What did he mean about saving Anfield? She demanded. Is the estate in danger? The Earl didn't answer. Instead, he put down his glass and shuffled for the door as if he were a shell of a man. He stopped as he came abreast of Mac.
Why couldn't you have hanged?
Inconvenient of me, I know, Mac replied.
The man walked out the door. She watched her uncle, her expression stricken, and he knew her mind was churning over something.
All right, he said. What do you suspect?
He has lost Anfield. She made a sound of incomprehension. How could he do such a thing?
Tay's a gambler. It is not unheard of.
But it doesn't make sense, she countered. My father is a good solicitor. He understood the family records. He told me that Anfield was protected. After all, my uncle has no male heir. Upon his death, the title and all that goes with it would fall to my father.
Granted, my uncle has had to sell off most of the land, but the house was safe. Always safe.
Unless there was an error that would allow the entailment to be circumvented.
She shook her head, as if denying that such a thing could happen. My father boasted that all that was right.
Mac shrugged. He had a very different opinion of Richard Davidson. We shall ask him when we find him.
You believe he is fine and well?
I'm now almost certain of it. And perhaps Mr. Kenyon is also alive.
How? She started, but he shushed her quietly.
Not here, he advised,
taking her arm and leading her out of the room. Tay and Ingold were not to be found, and Mac was not surprised. The butler was a loyal man. He picked up his hat from the hall table and directed her outside. She waited until they reached the shelter of the trees lining the stable path before shaking loose of his hold and saying impatiently, "Why do you believe my father and the Reverend are alive?"
"Ingold. He was there the night of my escape. When the Reverend was shot, a large man was the first to come running toward us. He had an unusual silhouette. I had bent over to see if there was something I could do for Kenyon, and then I heard the sounds of people coming. Of course, I couldn't stay. However, one man came out of the darkness as if he had been waiting. I did not mistake seeing Ingold."
She listened to him, her expression somber. "So, what are you saying?"
"That your uncle also helped me escape."
"For what reason?"
"Conscience. Is there a better one?"
She began walking down the path, her mind obviously working. He followed, waiting, knowing she would reach the conclusion he had. In the stable yard, Mac helped her into the cart, then climbed in himself, picking up the reins. Campbell and his fancy rig had already left.
"Which way to meet Mrs. Bosley?" he asked, driving out of the yard.
"To the north," she answered, too subdued for his liking. He set Dumpling off at a good clip. Once they were down the drive and on the road, he asked,
"What are you thinking?"
"Nothing."
"Oh, I beg to differ," he answered. "Sabrina Davidson's mind is never dwelling on nothing."
"Very well. What is Cormac Enright's,
Earl of Balin's, mind mulling over?" "Are you still annoyed about the title?" he asked, puzzled. "I explained I'm not accustomed to it. Furthermore, I received the title and a load of debts for which I had to leave the country." "Yes, I understand perfectly how trapped your uncle feels in his debts."
"Debts that may belong to my father as well, obviously."
"Not so obviously," he argued.
"We are family," she pointed out. "My uncle may have the title, but Anfield has been in the family for centuries. I was raised to revere it."
"Times change," Mac answered. "And sometimes people, in spite of good intentions, make mistakes. My brother didn't expect to run his inheritance into the ground."
"How did he lose it?"
"Well, there wasn't much to begin with," Mac answered. "We Enrights were always on the bad side of the political game. There is something inside of us that just can't stomach the English."
"We were always on the right side. I remember as a child how well kept Anfield was. The stables are good, but my uncle could ruin those as well, couldn't he? But he can't lose Anfield. It is all we have. It is our legacy."
Mac didn't answer. She was in an odd mood. He didn't believe it was just worry over her father that made her quiet. She acted as if a light had gone out inside her. They were approaching the crossroads. Mrs. Bosley's gig waited on the road while she paced, her maroon velvet cape flying around her. At the sound of their approach, she stopped and watched them, her expression anxious. Miss Davidson reached for the reins and pulled the pony to a stop well beyond earshot of Mrs. Bosley. She didn't look at him as she said, "I believe we must part company, and it is best to do it now." Mac frowned his confusion. "Part company? What are you saying?"
Miss Davidson raised troubled eyes to him. "I can't help you any longer," she said. "You must go on your own."
"And your reason?"
he asked, surprised by how upset her words made him. Without realizing it, he had started to think of them as allies, partners in vindicating his name. He trusted her. She disabused him of that notion as she said, I can't help you clear your name. Not without destroying my own family.
Chapter 16. Sabrina anticipated that he would be angry at her announcement. After all, she was saying she would side with his enemies. She had not imagined he would be hurt by her defection. And yet she had no choice. Her father was involved in Gordana Rani's death itself. She knew that, and so did Mr. Enright, whether he said it aloud or not. That is why he suspected her father was alive. He was protecting himself. She did not believe her father was capable of murder, but she would not rule out her uncle. Why else would Owen Campbell have attacked him? There were too many questions here, and she could perceive no answer that would be for the betterment of her family. Nor did she trust that she could, in good conscience, play a hand in bringing her uncle or father to justice, not if the sentence was going to be death. She looked away from Mr. Enright. Otherwise, she would change her mind. Yes, she felt an obvious, strong physical attraction to him, but there was also something more, something she couldn't quite define, and it had nothing to do with desire. Mr. Enright treated her as if he valued her opinion, as if he considered her a full partner in solving the mystery surrounding that young girl's death, and she was painfully aware that she was throwing his trust away as if it didn't matter.
"I see," he said.
"I don't know if you do," she murmured, feeling guilty.
"Then explain."
Sabrina wished he would just leave, and yet she also wanted to hold on to his presence as long as possible. She also found she needed him to understand. Before coming upon him in the bothy, every day of her life had been the same. Then he came along. He'd engaged her intellect, and she'd begun to believe the compliments he gave. She was starting to feel special, pretty, womanly. Of course, he'd had very few options in his choice of companions. No one else had paid attention to his story except her. But now, the stakes were too high. "I fear my father has involved himself in one of my uncle's schemes. Your suspicions about your escape may be correct. My father might have attempted to help free you, because for an innocent man to hang based on his false testimony would go against everything he believed in. But I can't betray my family. I don't even want to think of the scandal." If there were no Anfield, if her father was no longer the magistrate, then what would become of her? "Leave," she told him. "Take Dumpling and the cart and leave this place. Sell them for what you can receive and flee the country. Save your life." Desperation coloured her voice. She reached for the door, ready to climb out, but he put his arms around her.
"You would have me take an animal you raised and sell him to save your uncle's worthless hide."
"We are family," she said. "Our name is all we have." Sabrina closed her eyes, wishing he wasn't so close, wishing she didn't have to tell him to leave, wishing she had met him under other circumstances. "I have nothing else of value to give you," she whispered. "I have given you everything, but I can't help you destroy us."
He released his hold. "Destroy? That is something you did to yourselves."
The truth of his words almost crushed her. She didn't know why her father had involved himself in her uncle's affairs. In this moment, she didn't care about Anfield. Everyone knew her uncle was a disgrace, but they'd respected her father and, consequently, respected her. "I think my uncle and father have done something for which they feel shame. But I don't believe they are murderers. In fact, for all I know, you could have killed that girl," Sabrina heard herself suggest.
Those words did the trick. His body stiffened with the rise of his temper.
In the next beat, he released his hold on her and climbed out of the cart. He began walking, jumping over the stone dike so that he could cut across the field. Sabrina watched him leave, and she felt as if her heart were being ripped in two. She wanted to call him back, to tell him that she was sorry she hadn't meant those words. She'd been rattled, afraid. But none of that was true. As he disappeared into the forest, she realised she'd pushed him away to protect herself. Dear God, she could barely breathe from the pain of letting him go, and it amazed her. He'd swept into her life and changed her in a way no one else could have. Now nothing would ever be the same. He did not look back, not once.
"Don't return," she whispered. "Be safe."
But he would not hear her words or see the regret on her face. For a moment she feared she would lose consciousness from giving him up, and yet what choice had she? He'd asked for freedom. Now he had it. The Davidsons had done enough to destroy him. As she picked up her horse's reins, she had a sick feeling in the pit of her stomach that she'd made the worst mistake of her life. And no amount of common sense, of telling herself she barely knew him, or using any rational reasoning, could erase her unease. He'd been the one. She recognised him now. He'd been the man she'd longed for in her life, as she'd always believed was out there. Of course, she hadn't danced at the Valley Assemblies or given the local lads a bit of time. She'd been waiting for Cormac Enright, the newly minted Earl of Balin. He was the one. And now she had no choice but to go on with her life. But it would not be as barren as what it had been before. No, he'd changed her. She drove up to where Mrs. Bosley waited. "Where did Mr. Enright go?" the widow asked.
"He had to leave," Sabrina answered.
"To go where? I thought he was going to help us find Richard."
"Perhaps if Mr. Enright is gone, then Father will return home. After all, there would be no reason for him to hide."
"Richard is hiding?"
"I'm not certain, but I sense my uncle knows where he is." She didn't mention Owen Campbell. "With Mr. Enright gone, Father is safe." And all would be as it was, except she didn't know how she would react toward her father in the future, or if she could ever forgive him for what he'd done to Cormac Enright. Her opinion of her sire had changed. The widow placed a hand on her arm. She was apparently not fooled by Sabrina's false bravado.
"What is it? Why did Mr. Enright truly leave?"
"Because I told him to do so." Sabrina had wanted to keep it all in, but there were some things that could not stay contained.
"My uncle may have killed that girl. Certainly he was involved in something terrible. I could see that it weighed on his mind, and he probably owes money to Owen Campbell. He may have lost Anfield."
"But that shouldn't be your father's worry."
"If any of this involves the house, then it is part of his concern," Sabrina tried to explain to Mrs. Bosley. "My father would protect the family's legacy."
"So he would lie to a jury and see an innocent man sentenced to hang? Over a house?"
Sabrina stared at Mrs. Bosley. Anfield was everything to the Davidsons. But was it worth a man's life?
Having one's beliefs, especially those honed since childhood, challenged, was unsettling. Sabrina had never known a time when the title wasn't important. What people thought of the Davidsons was always a serious matter. Everyone knew her uncle was a wastrel, but he was still titled, and her father and her standing had rested on their connection to Tay. But things were changing. Her cousins, the Earl's daughters, had gone off and married men who mattered to them, men whose positions in society were built on something other than ceremony, men whom they respected and loved. Men like Cormac Enright.
"If your father is the sort of man who would lie to condemn an innocent man," Mrs. Bosley was saying, "then I would have nothing to do with him."
"But what if Mr. Enright isn't innocent?" Sabrina had to ask.
"Do you think him capable of murder?" Mrs. Bosley wondered.
"I don't know what he is capable of. I barely know him."
And yet she did know him. She felt as if she'd known him forever.
Oh, dear God, what had she done?
Mrs. Bosley echoed the doubts in her heart when she said, "Seeing the two of you the other night, I sensed there was something powerful stirring between you."
"How can there be?" Sabrina wanted to know. "We are very different people."
"Aye, but sometimes it all happens like that. And quickly."
Mrs. Bosley leaned on the side of the pony cart. "Love doesn't come about because a couple is courting for a certain length of time and knows all the same people and are from the right families. Sometimes it just blossoms on its own."
"Love?"
Sabrina attempted to laugh, but the sound rang false even to her own ears. Yes, she cared for Mr. Enright. Yes, she felt a connection to him. But she was a sensible woman. Sensible enough to lust for him, or had her instincts known something her mind had yet to accept? Still, Sabrina had to deny it. Men as handsome as Mr. Enright don't profess love for women as plain as myself.
Plain? Mrs. Bosley repeated. Where did you gain that idea? You are a lovely girl, a very handsome one, and any man would be lucky to have you. Besides, when love is part of what happens between a man and a woman, looks are no longer important. There is beauty in admiration.
Men admire beautiful women. On the surface, Mrs. Bosley agreed, but do not sell them short. Men have great hearts.
Oh, yes, there are the shallow ones. I've met enough of them. But most men, the ones I know, the good ones, they can hold a deeper love than even women.
Your father is one of those.
Sabrina made a disrespectful sound.
My father? The man who barely spent a moment's time with my mother when she was dying?
Well, who is good at that?
Mrs. Bosley countered.
I was, Sabrina said. I was there.
But she wanted him. She wanted her husband by her side. You need to know this, Mrs. Bosley. He was not there for her. Don't romanticise him.
I don't, lass. But I don't hold him to high standards either. He's human. He didn't know what to do.
He could have sat by her side, watching someone he loved die. That wasn't possible for him.
And you know when the time comes. And if I go before him, he'll do the same to me, and I'll understand because I love him. We all have our strengths and weaknesses.
Mrs. Bosley straightened, pushing away from the pony cart. Most important, I trust your father. I believe he is trying to make things right.
Would you help Mr. Enright destroy him?
The question seemed to catch the widow off guard.
I see now what you mean. Father is caught up in something dangerous.
Or he is trying to untangle himself the best he can. He may be wrong, but if he is, I will forgive him, because that is the way love is. Once I love, I will not give up.
The widow might blindly offer loyalty, but Sabrina realised she was not cut of that same cloth. She had to love with both head and heart.
I need to know the truth behind that girl's death, Sabrina said, regardless of the price my family pays. I am not going to back down on this.
But I was right to cut ties with Mr. Enright. Of course I was, she repeated, needing to convince herself. He had been growing too close to her and clouding her vision. She needed to protect her family. At least until I know what happened. And if there was a clue as to why her father was involved with her uncle's affairs, she sensed it must be in his papers. Her father always took careful notes.
Yes. She would search for answers.
What are you going to do now? Mrs. Bosley asked. Do you wish to come home with me?
The question startled Sabrina because, for a moment, she actually considered it. A few days ago, she would not have even looked at Mrs. Bosley, let alone accept her as an ally. But if she was going to snoop amongst her father's things, she did not need an audience. She wasn't certain what she was looking for, let alone what she would find, but some insistent little voice told her she needed to look.
Thank you, I shall be all right. Someone should be at the house in case father returns.
Perhaps I should go with you.
Sabrina looked at the petite woman with her anxious expression and said,
You really do care for him, don't you?
I told you, I love him.
There was a beat of silence. Then Sabrina admitted, I think you will be very good for him.
The compliment had come easily to her lips, and with it, resentment and anger had fallen away. Freedom.
Mrs. Bosley smiled her happiness.
I know I will. And listen, my dear, there will be a place for you at our table, always. I didn't believe so at the beginning, because I didn't know you. You always seemed so distant. But I think the two of us will manage well together.
Tell that to Dame Agatha, Sabrina said.
Laughter met those words.
I will.
Sabrina didn't linger, but pointed Dumpling in the direction of home. He was happy to go. It had been another long day to him. Sabrina felt drained inside, but she was also apprehensive. the Davidsons had secrets. Perhaps it would not be wise to poke her nose into her father's affairs. Mrs. Bosley's happiness could be short-lived, depending on what Sabrina found. Then again, she might not act on what she learned. Or she could be trapped by whatever secret she uncovered, and yet she must face the truth. And it was best she went alone, without Mr. Enright. It would be easier, especially if she was called upon to make a hard decision. But her heart hurt, and she knew the sense of loss would always be with her. Mrs. Patton was still cooking away in the kitchen when Sabrina arrived. She had finished roasting the venison and was very proud of herself.
"Colonel Enright would like the taste of this. My own recipe," she bragged. "I soak it in milk."
She looked around Sabrina.
"Where is the Colonel and the Master?"
"Father is in Kenmore," Sabrina said, amazed at how easily the lie came to her lips. "Colonel Enright will not be joining us this evening. His business with Father has concluded."
"It has?"
Mrs. Patton echoed, her voice sad. She stood a moment in silence, then said,
"I was hoping he would stay. What a good man he was."
"Yes," Sabrina agreed, preparing to walk down the hall.
"I thought perhaps something special might happen between the two of you," Mrs. Patton suggested.
An overwhelming sense of loss threatened to engulf Sabrina. She tried to keep her voice light as she said,
"I don't have a notion what you were talking about."
"Oh, yes, you do."
Mrs. Patton wiped her hands on a towel as she approached Sabrina.
"I could see it in your face. It brought out a softness in you. It wasn't there the day before, but this morning I had a strong feeling about the two of you. I can always tell when two people will make a fine match."
"All he wanted was some business with my father," Sabrina managed to answer around the tightness in her throat.
"Yes, miss. Understand," Mrs. Patton answered, and Sabrina was afraid she did.
Sabrina escaped to her room. She caught a glimpse of herself in the mirror over a wash basin. She didn't appear softer to her eyes. She appeared sad and doubtful. And, yes, a little afraid. Mrs. Patton called out that she was leaving. Sabrina went out to the stairs and said,
"Thank you."
The smell of fresh bread and roasted venison, the special meal Mrs. Patton had prepared for Mr. Enright, was all through the house. Sabrina took a moment to remove her bonnet and splash cold water on her face. She went downstairs and let Rolf in. The dog trotted right to the kitchen and, was it her imagination, but did he also search for Mr. Enright as well? She turned and faced her father's study. This was where he kept all of his important papers. She didn't know what she was looking for, but she hoped she found it here. 2 hours later, she wasn't so certain. She'd gone through every drawer, every cupboard, and opened all the ledgers. She'd not found a reason for her father to be at the Rook's Nest or to lie about seeing Mr. Enright murder that girl. However, she learned that her father kept the Anfield books. He carefully tracked every crop raised and stallion bred. And then, in the last ledger she had to review, she came upon a note on the edge of one of the ledgers stating, "Sold to Owen Campbell." Her father could not have meant the crops, but the land. A few pages later was another entry, "Land sold to Owen Campbell." Sabrina wondered if her uncle had sold the land or lost it at the gaming table. She'd known Owen Campbell had held a portion of the Davidson land, but she had not expected so much. The hour was not late. It was 6 or so in the evening, but the day had grown cloudy and the house was cast in shadows. She carved off a piece of Mrs. Patton's venison, put it between 2 slices of bread, and, picking up the lamp she'd been using in her father's office, went upstairs. She lit the fire and a lamp in her bedroom before going to her father's. She'd never gone through his things before. They'd both respected each other's privacy. Mrs. Patton would put away laundered items, and Sabrina had no reason to pry. The top drawer contained his small clothes. The second drawer held his woolens. She found a book of poetry there. It was Shakespeare's sonnets. Sabrina opened the cover and found it was inscribed from her mother to her father. "To my loving Richard," she had written. For a moment, An overwhelming sense of loss threatened Sabrina.
How she wished her mother were here to help guide her.
And yet, in the few minutes she'd spent with Mrs. Bosley, she'd received more advice than her mother had ever offered. In truth, her mother had been bothered by her illness. It had made her feel inadequate. She'd not been one to complain, although she had relied on her daughter's constant support. Perhaps Sabrina had learned how to suffer in silence from her. She'd rarely expected anything from her father. She had an idea that Mrs. Bosley was not so accommodating, and she found herself smiling. The widow would keep her father in line. Still, the presence of the book in her father's personal belongings touched her deeply. It meant that he did cherish her mother's memory. She flipped through the pages of the book, remembering when she'd read Shakespeare aloud to her mother. It was then when she noticed that someone had torn up a document and placed pieces of it carefully between the pages. She placed the book on top of the dresser and began pulling out the document. She moved the pieces around until she could read what they said. It was her father's marker for a gambling debt of £200. That was an exorbitant amount. Her stomach clenched just at the thought of it. And the paper was signed by Owen Campbell and her father. Mr. Enright had been correct. Her father had gambled at the Rook's Nest, and he had been losing. So what did finding a voucher torn up and stashed amongst her father's personal belongings mean? Rolf, who had been sleeping on the floor by the door, suddenly jumped to his feet and began snarling. "What is it?" she asked. The dog ran out in the hall. She followed, listening. She could hear nothing until, with a great crash, the front door burst open, and three men with masked faces came charging into the house. Chapter 17. She'd chosen her family and their dubious honour over him. Mac was so deeply offended, so angry, he could have ripped the forest apart with his bare hands. As he strode through the woods, his legs eating up the ground that took him away from Miss Sabrina Davidson, he had to pause every once in a while to punch the air with his fist. He knew he wasn't being reasonable. He also was aware that Sabrina was trying to be loyal. He had no doubt she believed her motives were pure, but he thought they were rot. She was courageous and forthright, until her family name was threatened. On one level, he understood. He was a threat to her family, but he had been from the beginning. Of course, what angered him the most was that she didn't trust him. She didn't understand that he would do all in his power to shield her, even if it meant making an allowance for her lying father and drunkard uncle. He would protect her. Mac made an angry swipe at a tree limb that was in his way. He was walking with no other purpose than to cool his temper. Then he would think of where he wanted to go and what his next step should be. Perhaps he should leave Scotland and forget about clearing his name. He'd find a way to leave. He had spent his money, but he was resourceful. He had skills. He could disappear into the world, which apparently was what everyone expected him to do. They just hadn't realised how seriously he took his honour, as seriously as Sabrina Davidson took hers. And he stopped dead in his tracks. Sabrina hadn't sounded proud when she told him that she could not help him. She'd been ashamed. But there was something else tied up in his anger. He liked her. He trusted her. In fact, he might be a bit in love with her. The realization startled him. Love. He hadn't thought about love since Moira had taken his heart and broken it open. He'd hated love. And his opinion of it had grown worse over time. He'd met men who could accept losing an arm or leg with stoic determination, but let a man receive a letter from home letting him know his beloved had betrayed him, and that brave man would break down into tears. He'd lose all sense of value in himself. Mac had understood. Oh, yes, he had. When he was younger, he had taken his medical studies seriously. After all, he'd had Moira depending on him. Once he finished, they would marry and settle into a good life. He'd loved her from the moment they'd met, when he was only 12. Even back in those days, he'd been full of himself.
but the love Moira had claimed she'd felt for him had paled in comparison to the love she had for Lorcan. Anyone could see that was true. Anyone but Mac. He'd felt as if he'd been cheated, duped. Hearing that Moira loved another had been a humbling, painful moment in Mac's life. When she told him, he'd turned and walked, just like he was doing now. He'd taken himself as far away from his family as he could, and he had nursed that anger until the day he began to miss his family and his country. He'd wanted to return home, but they were not there. However, Sabrina was no Moira. She spoke up. She didn't hesitate in letting him know exactly what she was thinking every step of this journey, even to telling him she couldn't help destroy her family. Mac hadn't considered that was where his quest would take him. To him, it was all about learning the truth. Gordana hadn't deserved to die the way she had, and if anyone stepped into his path, well, they would reap what they'd sown. Sabrina's vision had been clearer than his. She'd sensed where this would lead, and she'd taken stock of the cost. He looked back in the direction he had travelled. Funny, but he already missed her. The two of them had fallen into step with ease. He'd liked having her by his side. She balanced him. That morning, he'd barely been able to contain himself, waiting for her to wake and discover him about the house and not locked in the attic. He hadn't climbed out of a window. He'd actually picked the lock, a simple thing to do, but she'd accepted his story. In spite of her intelligence, she could be artlessly gullible. And she could kiss. The memory of her waking him with a kiss was never far from his mind, as was the feeling of being inside her. She was a half of him he'd not known he was missing. And he was walking away? Anger, resentment, fury over the injustices of his life roiled inside of Mac, then were gone like a turbulent storm that had created havoc and dissipated. In their place was a realization that he'd been brought into the presence of something better than he could have imagined, something finer and more wonderful, more brilliant than anything he had ever experienced in his life. Sabrina. Of course, she'd sent him away, but she had been wrong to do so. He would just have to tell her that. They had started this together, and whether she realised it or not, she needed him to see it through. In fact, he was embarrassed that he had allowed his temper to have the best of him. He should have stoutly informed her that he would not leave until they had solved this mystery. They were a partnership, a duo. Perhaps if he had just kissed her, they both would have seen reason. Mac began walking back the way he had come. His step was lighter and faster. He was looking forward to his coming interview with Miss Davidson. She would protest, then he'd argue, she would refuse to listen, and this time he would kiss her into silence. Yes, he would kiss her, and he would do something he'd not thought he'd ever do again in his life. He would love her. Not make love to her, although he wanted to do that as well. This time he'd be certain she knew how much he respected and valued her. He would explain that life made sense when he was around her. She would claim they didn't know each other well. He would reply he felt as if his soul had known her forever, and kiss her again. Sabrina would suggest they spend some proper time courting. He would answer by kissing her. Finally, she would accuse him of being quite mad. He would agree, then kiss her. He'd also say that he was not about to let her escape him. There were many women like Moira, but only one was as stubborn as Sabrina Davidson. He hadn't travelled far when he saw a gig on the road along the woods. The driver wore a maroon cape. He stopped, wondering what Mrs. Bosley was about. She saw him as well and called, "Mr. Enright, I'm so glad I caught you." Mac jumped over the narrow divide of a running stream and stepped onto the road.
"Are you now?"
"I am. You appear to be walking back to Aberfeldy, or have you lost your way?"
He shifted his weight, then confessed.
"I am going in the direction of Aberfeldy."
"In the direction of Miss Davidson?"
"I might be,"
Mac said, uncertain whether he trusted this woman.
"Does this mean you will continue to help us find my Richard?"
"Unfortunately."
"Good,"
she answered, not taking offence.
"We need you. Would you like a ride?"
"Did Miss Davidson tell you she wanted nothing to do with me?"
He had to know. Mrs. Bosley rolled her eyes heavenward. Women like Miss Davidson are prouder than a hen that can lay 3 eggs. They believe family name is all they are worth, and so they have to protect it. Now, before you believe I am being harsh on her, let me assure you, most men have the same character defect. I'm going to say something here, and there are those who would accuse me of feathering my own interests. I want to marry her father. I know you don't think much of him, but he is not a bad man. He isn't as thoughtful as my late husband was, but he is far better than his brother the Earl.
And what do you want to tell me?
Miss Davidson deserves a better life than the one she has right now. In this valley, she'll grow old quickly. Everyone believes they know her. But here you've come along, and I'm seeing another side of her. Don't leave her here alone.
Mac climbed into the gig. Then take me to her.
A huge smile broke across Mrs. Bosley's face. With a flick of her driving whip, she set them off at a smart pace. Within the hour, they were in Aberfeldy. Darkness was falling. There were few people out and about, and most were anxious to find their homes on this chilly evening. Mac pulled the brim of his hat low over his eyes, not wanting to be noticed.
"I'll let you off here at the bridge," Mrs. Bosley said.
"It wouldn't do if Miss Davidson knew I'd come looking for you, even though you were already on your way back."
"Good luck to you, sir. She's a stubborn lass."
"Eh, she is," Mac said,
giving Mrs. Bosley a small salute.
"Tomorrow we will find Richard?" she asked.
"We can try,"
she nodded.
"I'd best be home. He might come looking for me there."
She drove away. Mac crossed the bridge. He could see the Davidson house. He didn't know what he was going to say to Sabrina, but he trusted that the right words would come to him. He just prayed she gave him time to say them. A sinister shadow crossed in front of the house and blended in with the darkness. Two more figures also moved, one going around to the back of the house, and then there was a third. The house was being attacked. Mac began running. Rolf was barking madly. He bravely charged down the stairs at the men filling the hallway.
"No, Rolf!"
Sabrina cried. But the dog didn't listen, snapping at the two men who started up the stairs toward her. The third went running down the hall as if on a hunt. The first man up the stairs backed away from Rolf, but the man behind him shoved him aside. He lifted a club and slammed it against the dog. Rolf went wild. He leaped for the man, grabbing the material of his sleeve in his teeth. The man lifted Rolf and threw him over the side of the stairs. Sabrina screamed her outrage and went running to help her pet, but the man with the torn sleeve grabbed her by the wrists. She kicked and attempted to bite him. He was a big man. He shook her hard.
"Where is the Irishman?"
Her response was to lift her knee. It didn't hit where she would have liked to kick the man, but it did land in his soft belly and caused him to grunt in pain. He did not release his hold, but twisted her arm, pulling her closer to him.
"Tell me where the Irishman is, and I'll be nice to you when I have you."
She'd not thought of rape. Her mind grew frenzied. She struggled to free herself then, as if by magic. The man released his hold. She fell to the steps, landing hard on her hip. Rolf was barking again. She wanted to tell him to stop, to save himself. And then she saw the smaller man go rolling down the stairs where Cormac Enright, with his broad shoulders and lean muscles, had thrown him.
"Where is the Irishman?"
Mac asked. He now had the man who had attacked her bent over the banister.
"Here's the Irishman. What do you have for me?"
He held the man by his neckcloth, which he twisted painfully around his throat.
"I will write Sabrina,"
Cormac asked. She nodded, too afraid to speak except to say,
"Rolf, come here."
The dog ignored her, running to the back of the house, where there was the sound of running feet.
"Who sent you?"
Mac demanded of the man, pulling down his mask. Before the man could answer, his two companions had regrouped and charged up the stairs to help their fellow.
"Cormac, watch out!"
Sabrina cried, and ran to her bedroom. She grabbed the iron poker and the shovel that leaned against the hearth, and so armed, dashed to Cormac's aid, ready for battle. Cormac was already doing a magnificent job. He had the advantage over the men trying to grab him. They couldn't fight more than one at a time on the stairs, and Mac was taller and stronger. That didn't mean they weren't going to try to take him down. There was no doubt in Sabrina's mind. They were there to silence Cormac for good. "Cormac, here," she said, and came up behind him with the poker.
"Lovely,"
he said with satisfaction.
"Stand back."
He swung the poker. It made a satisfying whipping sound as it sliced the air. Then he wielded it like a sword. Sabrina stood on the top step behind him, her shovel held high, ready to bash in the first man who made it past Mac. She yearned to give them a pounding. The men backed away, and the one nearest the door tripped over Rolf, who was making an effective nuisance of himself at the foot of the stairs. The brigand flailed his arms and reached for something to hold, and grabbed the coat of the man nearest him. That man lost his balance as well, and the two of them rolled over each other to the bottom of the stairs. They lay there, groaning. The big man looked at his companions on the floor, then back up to the deadly poker that pointed at his nose.
"That leaves you all alone, mate," Cormac said. "So tell me,
who sent you?"
The bully wasn't so certain of himself anymore. He glanced up at Sabrina. She shook her shovel at him, and he turned tail and ran. He was a clumsy beast. He fell over his companions, scrambled up, and ran out the door. His friends managed to help each other to their feet, even as Mac came down the stairs toward them. They too ran. Mac slammed the door shut.
"Stay there," he ordered Sabrina. "I'm going to investigate the rest of the house."
"Stay here?" she repeated in a daze. "I couldn't go anywhere."
Her knees suddenly weak, she sank to the step and let the shovel drop. Rolf watched Mac go down the hall. She called him.
"Come here, pup. Let me see you."
The dog lowered his head as if embarrassed he hadn't been more of a guardian to her.
"You were wonderful," she said. "But are you all right?"
The dog came up the stairs and wagged his tail. She hugged him, and that was when the tears came. In fact, her whole body was trembling, and the sleeve of her dress had been torn. Her hair was also hanging halfway down her back. Rolf laid his head in her lap. She could hear Mac closing the back door and righting pieces of furniture that the men had knocked over. He came walking down the hall. Glancing up, he saw she was crying. He took the stairs two at a time and knelt in front of her.
"Here now. Did they hurt you?"
His dark eyes were full of compassion.
"They scared me," she admitted. "I'm so glad you came back. But why did you?"
He looked down at her as if she'd asked the strangest question in the world. Then he smiled, that endearing, lopsided smile of his.
"For you," he answered. "I came back for you."
His words seemed to shimmer in the air all around her. He'd returned for her, silly, awkward, provincial her. Of course she kissed him. She must. And he was kissing her back. Chapter 18. Mac fell back a step as Sabrina flung herself in his arms. She had been so brave. Her kiss was powerful, unrestrained, and he returned it with all the passion in his being. He could have lost her. He hated to imagine what those animals would have done to her, but she was whole and vibrant and his. He knew that now. She was his. He began undressing her. She offered no protest. Instead, her fingers became as busy as his own. Clothing was pulled down over shoulders or tossed aside. Laces were undone and buttons released. The kiss had to break for Mac to remove his boots. It also gave him the opportunity to sweep her up in his arms and carry her into her bedroom. He went straight for the feminine frilly bed and set her on the floor. The remaining pins in her hair fell. She looked gloriously dishevelled in the lamp's golden glow. Her bodice rode low over her breasts, her shoulders bare. His Sabrina. Other women might stand on ceremony, but she was ruled by her passions, by her heart. He sat on the bed and held his booted foot up.
"I need help," he stated.
She laughed, surprised but trusting. Laughter. Who would have thought the sound of it belonged in the bedchamber? She tossed her hair over one shoulder and reached for his heel. She pulled, and the exertion caused her gown to slip lower. Sabrina stopped and looked down at her one exposed breast, the nipple rosy, hard and tight. Mac had never seen anything so beautiful. She glanced at him, speculation in her eye.
"You knew that would happen,"
he smiled.
"I hoped it would happen. Come, my darling, I have another boot."
He placed it in front of her. A pout came to her lips. She had not made any move to cover her breast, and he was delighted. Sabrina's tastes were much like his own. He enjoyed the earthiness of making love. He considered it a gift. "Is it fair I give all?" she challenged. He laughed. His neckcloth was on the floor beside his jacket in the hall. It was a small matter to pull his shirt over his head. She rewarded him by pulling her arms from her sleeves. Her dress fell to the floor. Her petticoats were tied around her waist, but her chest was bare, her breasts delightfully enticing. She placed her hand on his chest, leaning her body against his, and Mac forgot about the boot. Instead, he kissed her, his hand at her hip, smoothing over her buttock, working the ribbons of her petticoats free. His woman, his. She broke the kiss, looked into his eyes and whispered, "I am amazed that you were in my life." She ran her hand over his shoulder and down his arm. Their palms met and fingers laced. "I was wrong to choose father over you, especially after what he did." Tears welled in her eyes. "But I was afraid."
"And no?"
She made a small sound of capitulation. "It doesn't matter. Nothing matters except you are safe and I am with you. We can leave Scotland, we can go anywhere. I just want to be with you." Her faith and devotion humbled him. The kiss he gave her was not one of just passion. He kissed in loving gratitude that she was the person she was, the woman she was. It was a simple matter to finish undressing each other. He kissed her chin, her nose, her neck, her shoulder, her beautiful breasts. He rained kisses upon her. He worshipped her with kisses. He'd never wanted a woman the way he wanted Sabrina. His desire was hard and obvious, hungry. "You are mine," he said, looking down at her. Her head was on the pillow, her lush dark hair spread around her. "Do you understand? Mine. Whatever happens, we are together."
"We are together," she agreed,
gifting him with a dazzling smile. Her fingers wound themselves in his hair, and she pulled him down to her. What man could resist such an invitation? Not Mac, not with this woman. Slowly, almost reverently, he slid deep inside her. Sabrina arched her back and released her breath, as if she feared pain and was pleasantly surprised. Her body stretched to accommodate him. She smiled. He smiled down at her, and she began moving, her actions innocent and untutored. He met her where she was, and together they discovered their rhythm. The intensity of the night before had been no mistake. They fit well. She whispered his name against his skin, her voice tinged with both wonder and passion. He lifted her in his arms, wanting her closer, positioning her. Muscles tightened around him intimately. The heat in her was building. He pressed deeper, anxious to give her everything she desired, forcing himself to hold back. And yet there came a moment when he couldn't. Sabrina was so generous, so giving. Her movements quickened with her breathing. She whispered in his ear, "Mac, hold me." Oh God, yes. Release was more than just an act of lust and desire. It was a blessing, a benediction, a step closer to heaven than Mac had ever been. All because of her. Her arms and legs banded around him. Mac did the same. Their bodies melded together. Even their hearts matched beats. He buried his face in her neck, his lips drinking in her skin. His weight should have been crushing her, but she did not ask him to move, and he couldn't have, even if she did. Slowly, holding her, the world returned to center. Cool air brushed against his skin, and he heard a sound. Looking up, Mac saw Rolf's worried gaze staring at them. The dog hovered by the side of the bed. The sight caught Mac off guard and made him laugh. Sabrina had been lost in her own haze of completion. One arm was still draped over Mac's shoulder, while her other hand stroked his arm. Her leg was hooked over his. When he laughed, her eyes lit up. "I felt that," she said, reminding him that they were still joined, which was fine with him. He never wanted to leave her. "What makes you laugh?" she wondered, and he nodded to the dog. She turned, reaching a hand for Rolf. She rubbed her pet's head. "It's good, Rolf. All is good."
Her voice sounded drowsy, satiated.
Mac kissed her ear.
"It is better than good."
She turned to him and brushed aside a lock of his hair that had fallen over his brow. "Cormac," she whispered, then smiled, as if she liked the sound of his name.
"Sabrina," he answered.
Her smile widened.
"May we do that again? I'm not certain we have it quite right yet."
"Oh, we must practice often," he assured her, "every opportunity afforded to us."
"Can we practice now?" she asked, experimentally running her fingers down his ribcage. Mac was pleased that she wanted more. However, a man can only do so much, except he surprised himself when he felt himself stir. His body, his soul, had been waiting for her, and now that he'd found her, they weren't going to let her go.
"I believe that is an excellent idea, my lady," he said.
He heard Rolf give a dog-laden sigh and trot off to guard the door. Both Sabrina and Mac laughed before settling into the very serious business of making love. They had joined twice, and Sabrina found herself curious to know if they could do it again. Cormac pleased her. He knew exactly what she wanted. Now she understood the mysteries between men and women. No wonder Mrs. Bosley was so popular. In that moment, Sabrina knew she was in love. Heart and head. They both came together, in love, with Cormac. She didn't question her feelings or doubt them. One didn't when one was certain. Love was the most extraordinary feeling. It opened her heart in a way she'd not known before. And she knew why she loved him. He'd just proven himself to her. Even after she'd sent him away, he'd come back to her. He hadn't abandoned her. He wouldn't. But for right now, she wanted to drift off to sleep. They had climbed beneath the covers, and she snuggled into his body heat. But he had something else on his mind. He put his feet over the side of the bed and sat up. Sabrina frowned her protest before sitting with him. She pushed her hair back. "What is it?"
"When I pulled down the mask of that one man, did you recognize him?"
She shook her head.
"Should I have? Could he have been one of your uncle's men?"
Sabrina thought a moment of the stable lads at Anfield and the other servants.
"No, those were not my uncle's men. I grew up around those people. We are as close as family. I can't imagine one of them threatening me in the way that man did."
A shiver of distaste went through her.
"Then someone else sent them," he said quietly. "And frankly, there is only one other person that could be."
"Because there is only one other person who knows you are here," she agreed, coming awake. He nodded.
"Owen Campbell."
"But why?" she insisted, then caught herself. They both knew. She could see Mac reaching the same conclusion. "He may have murdered Gordana Rani," she said. "Why else would he want to protect himself? But I can't imagine Campbell murdering a mere singer. He has standing. Why would he jeopardize all of that?"
"I shall ask him when I confront him."
Cormac rose to his feet and reached for his breeches.
"What I don't understand is why your father is involved. Your uncle is the sort that will always find himself in with a bad crowd. But is your father of the same ilk?"
"I may have found an explanation," she said, remembering her discovery, and pushed aside the counterpane. She too rose and reached for her dress on the floor. She threw it on before going to her father's room, where the lamp still burned, and the pieces of the gambling vowel were spread out on the dresser. Mac had followed her. He looked over her shoulder. She spread the pieces of paper out for him to see clearly. Father owed Owen money, and there is no possible way that we could repay this amount.
"But it has been repaid. The marker is signed and torn up," Mac said, thoughtfully pushing the pieces of paper together. "He earned it back."
"Yes," Sabrina said, "by testifying against you, perhaps."
"And now, if your father isn't dead, then he is afraid of Owen Campbell, which he should have been from the beginning. Campbell is a nasty character."
He is not going to allow your father to walk the face of this earth with his knowledge of the truth of Gordana's murder.
Or he could. After all, father lied under oath.
Mac shook his head. It doesn't matter. Your father changed the terms of the agreement when he helped me escape. Campbell was beating your uncle because he wants to know where your father is. He may also be looking for the Reverend Kenyon, if he is still alive.
Or Campbell may have been the one who attempted to shoot us outside the toll booth.
Sabrina lightly touched a scrap of paper. At least father did the right thing in the end. She looked up at Mac.
But what do we do now? He could be in danger.
He is in danger. You saw the look on Campbell's face today. He wasn't using force with your uncle because he was pleased.
He moved the pieces of paper around and murmured, Everything is related. There are connections, and they must make sense. Your uncle gambles, but your father doesn't.
Yes,
but it is your father's name on the marker.
Perhaps he decided to do something foolish.
Or, as we discussed, he might have had a good reason. However, the common factor is Owen Campbell. They went to the Rook's Nest for a reason.
They know Owen.
Yes, but not everyone who owns an establishment would want an easy mark like the Earl of Tay for a patron.
What do you mean? Sabrina asked.
Tay is hard bitten. He's lost a great deal at the gambling tables.
What did he have left to wager? Campbell would only let him play if he thought he could relieve him of his possessions.
He already owns a good amount of land that my uncle lost.
And perhaps your father didn't want him to lose more, but maybe he fell into the gambling pit himself.
He's never gambled before.
But that doesn't mean he couldn't start.
This marker is from the 3rd of May. Gordana was murdered on the 10th. To have this torn up, your father paid it in full by witnessing against me. Campbell must want to know where your father is for a reason. He sent those men after me to see me dead. That would solve one of his problems. And then your father might have been safe. But I doubt it. Only a guilty man would hide his tracks.
Did Gordana ever mention Owen Campbell?
She sang at the Rook. I know she was looking for a benefactor.